Welcome to Helpful Social Work. Social work has the power to change people's lives for the better. This podcast aims to help you learn, think, and act with integrity so people who need social work get help that will transform their lives. Welcome back to Series 8 of Helpful Social Work. I'm Jo.
And I'm Jerry, and we're here with Chantal and Sylvia. If you would introduce yourselves as the future almost new hosts of Helpful Social Work.
So excited. I'm Chantal Thomas. I am the co-founder of the Anti-Racist Movement, and I will be, as you've heard over the last few episodes, you know, kind of taking over the reins very, very soon with my learned colleague, Sylvia. Sylvia, introduce yourself. You on mute, Sylv? Classic.
That's a good start, isn't it? Hi. I'm Sylvia Smith, a member of ARM, the Anti-Racist Movement. I've worked a lot with my esteemed colleague Chantal Thomas, and together we hope to take over successfully this particular podcast, and we're really looking forward to it.
We are
so great to hear. And can I just say that in the last month, we've had over 4,000 downloads of Helpful Social Work.
There you go.
Which is
definitely you too. Yep.
Yeah, I think I'm going to call it the Sylvia and Chantal effect. Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Hey, Jerry, we've had a bump.
Yeah. I mean, Chantal's head will grow, but I'm going to be a little more, I'm going to have some humility.
Don't be like that.
I'm sure. No, that's fantastic.
That's great to hear. Yeah, really, really lovely to hear, honestly.
Yeah. And I'm so looking forward to listening this year. I think it's going to be absolutely great. But here we are, March 2024. Mm-hmm. This is where we record the review of the year. And this is our 8th year doing Helpful Social Work podcast, mm-hmm. which I think, you know, it just feels like absolutely the right time to step out and hand this over to fresh voices, lots of energy and lots of wisdom as well. So this is Jerry's and my final review as host before we hand over. And guys, we always start with getting a feel for how the year has been. Like, so how people have felt this year, think about April 23, so spring mm-hmm. to now. Who wants to jump in and tell us about
this? Is hard, isn't it? Because we always do this just at the end of winter and when you're still thinking, is it going to be green again? And and so it feels like it's been a hard slog the last bit, definitely. But then when I look back to some of the events of last summer, we had a really great Baswa conference. We got lots of people together from across the country. I've done a bit more face-to-face work lately, some more events. People seem to be coming together a bit more, so that's felt positive. Mm-hmm. I think it's been a hard year, though.
It has been a hard year, and I'm just going to come in as well there, Jerry, because April last year, I was coming towards the end of my term as anti-racism lead for Baswa, so I kind of remember that quite distinctly. It had been, nearly 2.5 years of working across the country, trying, with varying degrees of success to try to understand, not only understand the landscape, but try to work with, whether it's local authorities, universities, students, leaders, organizations, whoever wanted to kind of understand what anti-racist practice meant, and also what their responsibilities were around, creating that culture, creating that environment within the workspace to ensure that people felt like, they belonged and felt a sense of the ability to progress. And that, also involved me doing a lot of work, delivering training, and working on one-to-ones, consultancy, as well. So it was a real shift for me in terms of my own, kind of personal development, but also a kind of a winding down, of my work with Baswa, but again, taking up the work around the anti-racist movement. So that, April, May last year was a real pivotal time for me, kind of in that regard as well.
I was just chatting before we came on air about how I reviewed my own year last year, this year rather. So in January I reviewed 2023, and as I was saying to you guys, I'd made the decision in February of last year that I was actually going to take a career break. Ha ha ha. And I think I spent most of the year preparing for that. So I sort of got more involved in the sort of independent training space. I tried to make some decisions about what I was going to keep hold of, because of course, working in the academic space, you still have sort of responsibilities to students and stuff. So I was sort of spending the time trying to make decisions about how I was going to play it, but also thinking to myself, I really don't want to plan it too much. So one of the first things I did, obviously, when I stopped working, was I went off to the Caribbean for 3 months to continue that thinking and reflective process. And it's done me the world of good. I hasten to add, it's done me the world of good. So last year feels a bit strange, but it's felt very much a time of making decisions, dropping some things, picking up other things. So yeah, that's where I am.
Yeah, transition, Sylv, isn't it? It's something about transition.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's okay. That I was just about to say a very similar thing, which is it reminds me of a lovely exercise where you think about a transition as going over a bridge, and you look and you see what it is that you need to leave behind, and you honour that, and then you pick up what it is you want to take with you, and you use that. And then you imagine what it is that you'll hold on to and what you'll get at the other side, and you look forward to that. And I think there is something about, you know, kind of thinking about those transitions. And certainly for me, because not all change is change that we opt for, is it? Some is forced onto us. And so, and so for me, you know, the closing down of my business as a large social work business into just coming back to a sole trader was not necessarily a choice I made. And so there were some really hard kind of letting goes there. And then on top of that, my best friend got a brain tumour and spent the majority of this last year battling that, and then eventually passing away just before Christmas. So for me, the last year has felt like there has been lots of letting goes and kind of lots of grieving work, but understanding too that, as Jerry said, you know, spring does come and new things grow. There is hope. And that hope for me is watching my son grow as well, and, you know, kind of get ready to launch into his adult life. So I think lots of transitions, lots of change, not all chosen, but, and fast. That's the other thing I'd say. Yeah. What a fast year.
I think it has been a transition year, you know, with the, we talked about COVID a lot, don't we, Joe? But, you know, there was this huge kind of shock, and there was lots of associated shocks as people kind of opened themselves up to the idea that maybe the world wasn't the straightforward place that they'd sometimes been able to believe that it was. You know, across our part of the world, people really opened themselves up to the fact that there is oppression, there is inequity, there are natural disasters and shocks, there is war as well. And so I think this year has felt like a lot of that kind of really being absorbed, but also having to transition into a sense of medium and long-term hopefulness, you know, because you can't live in a crisis. And I think it's kind of the same with social work, actually. There's been so much worry around cost of living and the impact on people and the ongoing impact of austerity, but you still see people kind of shaking that off to some extent and lifting themselves up and saying, oh, what are we going to do though? How are we going to make this work with what we've got? And how can we look forward to something better over the bridge, you know?
I love the analogy of the bridge. I really do love that, over the bridge, and, you know, picking up what we can and leaving behind. you know, what doesn't serve us anymore, and being intentional about that. I just love that analogy of a bridge, and we were talking before about, you know, building more bridges, not walls. You know, it is, you know, a lot more about trying to connect, readjust, find new ways to deal with presenting issues, whether chosen or otherwise. There was something about bridges that I find.
I mean, I know for me, for one, and I'm sure as you guys have indicated, I've had lots of discussions with people about, you know, where are we now post COVID? And it's so funny because on the Google app, picture app, often you'll get reminders of what was going on at any given point in a particular, you know, particular year. And, so I've been sort of looking at pictures that we took in 2020. And, you know, the world was very much, very much a different place. But I think we touched on this in the last discussion that we had. You know, in some respects, we have a bit of a blank, or had a bit of a blank canvas for some really positive change. But we're getting scuppered, and we're getting scuppered by some of the old tropes emerging. And, you know, I'm specifically thinking about this recent situation concerning Diane Abbott and this other guy, I can't remember what his name is. So, you know, it's like these things are sort of still dragging us back into the old, awful environments that we, you know, we're sort of trying to share. We're trying to move on. We're trying to make change. And I think certainly in terms of ARM and the work of ARM, that's what we're absolutely trying to do, but we keep getting knocked back. And that's extremely worrying. And obviously could be related to lots of other things that are going on in the world.
Yeah.
So there's hope, but there's also this awful sense of, you know, God, I thought we were over this, but clearly we're not.
Yeah. I think humanity keeps rising to the surface, doesn't it? And then every so often a wave will come over its head again. I mean, what we tend to do before we do the review of the year is have a look through what was on the BASWA, the British Association of Social Workers website, because that's not all the news, but it's the news that impacts on social work and social justice. And so some of the things are kind of ongoing things, the ongoing war in Ukraine, how we're supporting Ukrainians who are displaced in Europe and in the UK, ongoing challenges around migration and having to resist some of the rhetoric and policy around migration in this country. And I know that happens in many other countries as well. For example, age assessment processes that are not compatible with social work ethics. There has been a COVID-19 inquiry in the UK, which is still going. And that has included focus on social care and how social workers have been impacted in social care and health. And also, you know, when you look at the news that's affecting social workers, maybe most in people's minds at the moment is the terrorist attack on Israel in October, and then the ongoing war in Gaza and the suffering and the trauma from those events, not only affecting social work in that region, but it's also having a huge impact on social workers in this country and elsewhere who are personally affected or have relationships with the social work communities there. And I think, you know, there's a tapestry of upheaval across the world because of human conflict and environmental issues and economic issues. And they do really impact on social workers, not just because of being social workers and doing social work, but because people who go into social work tend to have a very strong sense of justice, and things that undermine human rights really personally affect people and professionally affect people. So I think there's been trauma, hasn't there? But there's also been this, you know, sense of humanity trying to rise in those contexts and in the light of events that are really affecting how we understand what being human is, you know.
And I think that, Jerry, that phrase, how we understand what being human is and what it means, is going to become more and more important to us. Because one of the things that I've noticed as I've been, you know, traveling around the country over the year, teaching, meeting with different people, is how some people are managing to actually create stronger communities, communities of practice, communities of support. You know, the ARM movement is a good example of a strong community that's so these kind of resiliency. I know resilience gets a bad rap, but I'm talking about resiliency of structures and resilience of support and what it is that we use, so how we act as social beings, I guess, in our profession. And I do think that we have been seeing people reaching out to each other, trying to find ways to grow good things. And I think that that's been a really positive thing to come out of this kind of trauma and difficulty.
I think, yeah, I absolutely echo what you're saying there, Shirley, because I think in terms of ARM and the work of ARM, we're very much dealing with what people are addressing in their sort of current experiences, their current life experiences. And yes, whilst there are these horrendous world events that are going on, there's an awful lot that's going on at home on our doorsteps. And I certainly think that's what we hear a lot about when we convene in the ARM group. Don't you think that's the case, Chantal? I mean, people do have concerns about what's going on the broader and the wider stage, but they're also very concerned about, you know, their own lived experiences and what's going on with them on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, something about what is going on, you know, on our doorstep and how we build that community of resistance, how we, you know, empower and support each other. I like what Joe said about, you know, the term resilience, because I thought of that word as well. But I often don't like it because it feels as though people should just endure things. So I do like the resiliency. I do like that. I understand, you know, that as a concept, because we have to, find ways, you know, to live, to move, to exist in a system that sometimes isn't, you know, so kind. And, you know, on a human level, as I said, a humanitarian level, the trauma, the suffering, how do we support each other in that, and what does that look like, you know, inside and outside of the UK? I think we are finding what that means, and people are kind of finding ways to do more, you know, for themselves and maybe not look to others to kind of find that or do that for them.
I'm resisting the idea that there's this really wonderful phrase, I can't remember where it came from, but this idea that there's a hierarchy of humanity, and that the job of social work is to resist that and to recognise the humanity in everyone. And that starts with each of us recognising that in ourselves, definitely. Because there's a real sort of peacekeeping role with a kind of small P and a small K of doing that work of relating to people and challenging or pushing back when people are saying that these people are more important than those people, or you know, that we should only attend to these people, or we should only care about this place.
Yeah, and I think for me, we are also seeing this return. I don't know if this is the right word or not, or if it's just I'm being drawn to people who are behaving in this way, but I find myself having more what I would consider to be, or what other people would have considered to be, radical social work conversations. So more people talking about systems rather than individuals, and you know, more people being concerned about some of those big issues. So, for example, poverty, which is, you know, absolutely huge and is touching on all of us in different ways. But for people we work with, the Joseph Rowntree Foundation report came out saying that 2 in every 10 adults are in poverty in the UK, with around 3 in every 10 children being in poverty. But there's also, you know, councils struggling, some going bankrupt, you know, that mileage being cut for social workers, lots of issues around pay for government workers not moving, to keep in touch with the rates of expenses that are going on around the world. And I think that you know, we're hearing more people talking, more social work practitioners, including those factors and thinking about how they can advocate and support people who are in those situations. And I'm really enjoying those conversations, because I can certainly remember a decade ago when I would raise some of this stuff, people used to say to me, "Oh, are you one of those radical social workers?" Like it was an unusual thing. But I think that's also a benefit. But you know, we need to be thinking too about the fact that all this austerity has really had an impact on care services, special education needs assessments being delayed, mental health, both in children's and adults. These things have really impacted on social workers' abilities to work well in partnership and to kind of reach across a network of resources. And I think that has meant that we're seeing much more innovative work, or we're seeing different work. You know, people are trying to become more and more creative and thoughtful about how they work with people. So for me, that's a positive as well.
Definitely. Yeah. I was just going to say, I think radical is good. Sometimes we have to think a bit more radical. We have to think differently in order to become and do differently. I'm actually at a conference now talking about contextual safeguarding and looking at systems outside of the home and the wider context, and how, you know, that was revolutionary in changing how we work with families, how we look and work with children. You know, poverty, again, you know, that Joel mentioned, poverty, so parenting is so much harder in poverty. How do we work? How do we ensure that, you know, our children, our families are better protected, in the wider context when there is so much stuff going on? We have to do things differently. We have to be radical. I love that word.
I mean, I was thinking about some of the work I've been recently involved in terms of training, you know, groups of professionals. And, you know, there is the issue, obviously, about our role in social work as social workers, around advocating and, you know, giving voice to those who are very rarely heard in an effective way. But tagging on to what Joe said about systems, I don't know if it was Joe or Jeremy that talks about systems. Some of our systems, and that, I suppose, can be attributed to, you know, lots of things, austerity being one of them. Some of our systems are so oppressive that not even those of us within it feel able to sort of speak and to advocate and to push back. So my sense of radicalism in that space is to try to help, you know, the people who are working in these systems to express themselves, to verbalize their lived experiences working in these systems, and to contribute to any kind of change that's going to take place. And in some of these spaces, thankfully, and I'm, you know, one could question the motives why, but some of the senior leadership individuals are prepared to listen. As to what will be done about it, I don't know, because that's the other part of the equation. But I do think it can be really challenging for those of us who are working in these systems to really articulate what it's like working in them and what we struggle with. And yes, we can find creative ways of undertaking our work, but there's a limit to how much creativity we can progress if we're still not necessarily getting the sort of roots support that we need to kind of progress that creativity. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's what
It really fits with what I've seen in adult social care, which is the main area that I'm involved in. There's been like a series of reports in the last year from a range of organisations, Church of England, House of Lords, lots from Social Care Future, which is a kind of user-led group movement for change from the directors of adult social services as well. And the sense of how to do adult social care better is really strong. You know, putting people up front and in control of things, having a real vision of what a good life is, and enabling everyone to live that kind of life and be part of the community. And the value of that to us all as a society, it comes through so clearly. The thing that's missing is the, I guess the it's the resource, and the, and that comes from the political and public will to make those changes. And you know, I think the thing that we're missing is it's the social contract, the social conversation, the whole society agreement about how we want our children and young people to grow up, all of them, you know, the one, including the ones that people try to pretend aren't there, how we want adults to, you know, what kind of life we want adults to have, what kind of later life we want to have. So I kind of feel like we're in a holding pattern at the moment, being ready to do the things, doing as many of them as we can, but being ready to do the things when there's scope for wholesale change.
You know, it just makes me think about, sorry, do you want to go ahead, Joe?
No, you go.
I was just going to say, it just made me think about, because we always come back to resources and funding, and what we do, what we see is sometimes money is, you know, and lots of money is spent on the wrong things. And maybe we, you know, is there something about, because we never, you know, we can always say, oh, we need more money to do certain things. But is there not something about, you know, redirecting or being a bit more creative, daydreaming, you know, just revisioning about what we can use the money we have, what can we use it for in a different way that can be a lot more bespoke, and, you know, speak to the needs of the, you know, the client group, the service user group, the people that we're working with, so that they do feel much more a part of the process as opposed to just being done to. We're never going to get, you know, the budgets that we need. But is there a way we can work better with the money that we have? And you're right, it does talk about power and sharing that and how we do that. But I think there is a way we can reimagine. And I really believe that there is a way we can reimagine, and try to do, you know, better with what we have.
And actually, I think... you see, when you say that, it makes me think, Chantelle, of that formula could be attributed to our leaders. You know, why don't they think about redirecting some of the funds that they may be squandering in different places? So, you know, I'm not just thinking about us and our responsibilities, our level, to sort of be creative, redirect, think more creatively and so on. But I think that can also be attributed to those who are leading the country and so on. I'm not, I mean, we don't have too much power with that, but that's a debate I think we should be engaging in as well.
But you both have made me think about, all three of you have made me think about, is that we do need to find a way to focus the resources, both in terms of the people and the finances, onto the people we serve. That's where the focus should be. And I think that the review, the Stable Homes Built on Love, is, you know, in the body of it, it's all about doing that, you know, focusing on the child and offering them, you know, the permanency and love and all of these things. And how are we going to do that? Well, we're going to build a new data set so that we know what to collect, so that we know what to measure, so that we know what to inspect, so we know what to record. So we, and so there's that kind of circular thing of really keeping these big organizations, the businesses of children's services in business. And they're the areas that I think should be slimmed down, actually, you know, and that's not me saying no one should be accountable. That's not me saying that at all. But I do think that the tail wags the dog a lot in terms of big structures. And you just have to go into any, and I often, and I'm sure you guys do too, work in authorities where there's an inspection coming and you see the state the authority gets into. You see the state that the senior team gets into. You see the personal trauma, like I do some coaching with senior people. You see the trauma they go through trying to evidence this stuff. It's not business as usual. And it takes a huge amount of resource and time. And I do think that there needs to be some really good challenge about how, as social workers, can we manage to advocate for our own profession so that our professionalism is supported and understood, and so that we understand what accountability looks like and we're able to step into that, because I would not want to see lack of accountability at all with any vulnerable group. But how do we kind of move some of the boots off our neck in a sense? You know, that when you talked about that oppression in systems, it really took me back into lots of different rooms where I've kind of ended up feeling like there was unintentional gaslighting, is probably the wrong word, but it was like people were speaking their truth and other people were just denying that completely and telling them they were wrong.
Are you sure that's what you mean? Are you sure?
Yeah. Yeah. Or just no.
That sounds so familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah. No, that's not true what you're saying. And then the person going, but this is the experience I had. Well, you must, you know, that's not the experience you had. You must have been wrong. And so I do think that there's that yes, we need to kind of think about the whole system. And some of these reports, which I've read and looked at and thought, oh, this is good. It does come into, but how do we implement them in a way where the focus goes, the resources and the time and the energy and effort goes to the people who need it most?
So I think there is a difference here between how children's services, the children's system and the adult system maybe feel there's a lot of parallels, there really are. But adult social care has got this strong vision in England and this reframing around a social care future and what a good life looks like.
And that's why Jerry's talk about the social contract and us having a debate as a society about what kind of place we want to live in, what kind of communities we want to inhabit, matters so much.
And that takes time, you know, and you know, to think about that, and it goes back to the, you know, the kind of relational and the relationship, the time to make and build those relationships so we can have those conversations and think about, you know, what it is people want as opposed to what we think they need, as well. And that doesn't cost, you know, you know, so much as, you know, paying for a care home or anything else. I do think, you know, and I think Sylvia mentioned around senior leaders and you know, those with the power to make the culture change can do things like that, you know, in looking at caseloads and creating the environment within an organization to allow social workers that time to do some of this, you know, some of the groundwork that's needed. Yeah, to make some of these things a reality as well. I think that could be an easier way.
Yeah, I'm really heartened.
One of the things I think that was triggered for me just a minute ago when Joe was talking about the conversations that need to happen. I'm always wondering, well, why aren't they not happening? And secondly, is there a deliberate avoidance of having these bigger conversations about what sort of society we want to be living in? I mean, the other day I was listening to this thing that this guy who does all the budget stuff, I think I told you about this already, Chantal, I don't know. What's his name? Martin Smith, I think he's called. The one who does all the... You
Martin
know,
Lewis.
Martin Lewis, that's the one. Martin Smith, someone else. and Martin Lewis was talking about, you know, what implications the new budget had for us, and, you know, talking about, you know, we won't have to pay as much national insurance, and you know, that's a benefit. But you know, that you think to yourself, well, that's probably what people want to hear. But by the other token, what they're not hearing is that if there is a lack of investment in public services, that's going to have a direct impact on all of us. You know, so it's all very well talking about the shillings we're getting back in national insurance. But what about what happens to some of our bigger institutions and our bigger organisations, our health service and some of the other public sector services that will have an impact on all of us? So I think sometimes there's a deliberate, I'm not blaming Martin Lewis, of course, but I sometimes think there's a deliberate avoidance of looking at some of those bigger issues. What kind of society do we want to live in? Are we not each other's keepers? Or, you know, I mean, I could drone on about it forever, but
I agree. I think that's right, that the shift in public debate in England, I don't think it's quite the same in the other nations of the United Kingdom, and it's arguably similar in America from what we glean on the news over here.
Yep.
Maybe different in some of the other European countries, some similarities. You know, that shift to people looking out for themselves, and it's your money, you should be able to keep it, rather than what's the resource that we have to build a good society and what's a fair share for people to pay when they've been really lucky. You have this shift, don't you, from people recognising that anything could happen to anyone and that where you happen to be born is absolute fluke, through to the other end of the spectrum where people are kind of like, well, I'm successful because of me and therefore I should be able to just enjoy that. And we are shifting more to that idea of what ends up as everyone for themselves. And it's really bad for you, because here's an example. We're all driving on the same roads, but because there's not enough tax being raised, they're full of potholes. Yeah. Doesn't matter how expensive your car is, it's still breaking.
It's still going to break, isn't it? Yeah. And that, you know, that makes me think about, you know, the whole deserving and undeserving, the whole why. I forgot my train of thought.
But you're right, it's an ancient idea, isn't it, that you categorise people, and that's that hierarchy of humanity, which is opposed to the human rights idea, the ideal that we're all born equal in dignity.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, you know, around, you know, individual versus the collective, the community. And it's easier to blame an individual, you know, for their own wrongdoing or for their own downfall, than it is for, you know, society and those with the power to take responsibility for what's happening, as well. So it is intentional. I do feel there seems to be a deliberate, you know, in not having these conversations, because therefore it's then easier then to, push the blame onto those that are less deserving.
And when you think about what's happened with bloody COVID, and when we were all petrified and terrified, we were a collective then. So my hesitancy, and I think a lot of people's hesitancy to return to business as normal, which I think we touched on in the last last podcast, I think it's driven by that, because you know, they're for the grace and all that.
Let's try and remember what it felt like when we were all sharing an experience and we all recognized each other's basic humanity, you know, that we could all get sick. And I know it wasn't an equal impact by no means, but it was a shared experience.
It was a shared experience. It definitely was.
Was it all on the same ocean, but in different boats?
In different boats, right.
And we are all on the same ocean, because we're all on the same planet. And humans come together because they recognize that together we thrive, actually. We're so great at cooperation. There's something so beautiful about when humans work together and cooperate with other, and the things that we create and build and the problems we solve are really inspiring. And that's one of the reasons I love social work, because social work is essentially a cooperative activity. And trying to keep a hold of that and keep a hold of that sense of a cooperative, thoughtful society where we recognize each other, and should applaud people who do well. That's really wonderful. And people do make good decisions and people do make poor decisions, but that can sometimes be the same person over their lifetime. Like,
that is so true.
Yeah. I wanted to pick up on a few really positive things from this year, social worky things, because I did look through, I was the one who went and read the news stories from the year that's just gone. So here's a few things. BASWA put out these standards for international recruitment of social workers. So we're hopefully not going to be bringing social workers in without holding people to account for how they're supported. And Joe's been involved in some of the work around that. There's been a lot of work done around training people, social workers, to respond to disasters, which is really positive. We had a bit of a moment in the UK when the government in Westminster decided not to ditch the Human Rights Act. And put in place a Bill of Rights, and there was a lot of social work involvement in that. I went to the BASWA Journalism Awards last summer in the BASWA conference, and it was celebrating journalists who'd provided positive, helpful kind of stories coverage, about social work coverage. Yeah, I got to meet a personal hero, Terry White, who was the editor of Empire Film Magazine. She's an absolute legend. But she won an award, various other people did, for shining a light on social work for the public in a way that framed it as something that is a public service, which is. And also the Northern Ireland Assembly reconvened, finally. So that's a huge positive for these islands. And on my list of positive things, I did put your anti-racist practice conference, the ARM one, because... Yeah, the meeting that you had in November, was just one of those things that kind of almost embodied the good stuff in social work.
Yeah, definitely. I think of course, I'm going to be biased and say that was the highlight of the year, you know, and the event of the century. But yeah, in terms of embodiment, I think definitely even just sitting here thinking about that day, that afternoon, nobody wanted to go home. As I said, we've been online for the last year, and just, you know, the poetry, the spoken word, the, you know, therapeutic space, just the food, the laughter. It was that joy, you know, we talk about black joy, and that was it embodied in that space, at that time. You know, I also attended the Journalism Awards as well. So, you know, I was also there and was able to kind of see social work shown in a way that often it's not. And that was really good to see. And I know that was the first one, and I'm sure there's going to be more. But that was really, really positive. I think last year was a good year. It was. I think ultimately there was a lot. You know, we touched on transitions at the start, and I'm going to stick with that theme, in terms of, you know, putting down stuff that no longer serve us, and picking up, stuff that we want to take over that bridge with us into this new year. In order to kind of, you know, reimagine and refocus a new way of being. And that means different things are different for us all, and I'm aware of that. So, yeah.
I mean, I do think that, you know, initiatives such as this podcast and other podcasts, there is a proliferation of social work podcasts that are coming up. And I'm talking about UK-based podcasts. I think that can only be a good thing, because what we're really, I mean, certainly with my own podcast, one of the things I wanted to do was to bring about more understanding of what we do, and not just limiting to social workers, but people in other allied professions, therapists and so on. So I think this kind of initiative is really going to help. It's really going to help to bring about that increased understanding, of what we do and what we think in terms of, you know, our roles in society and so on. Well, that's what I'm hoping anyway, that this will definitely be a positive outcome for doing what we're doing now, having these kinds of discussions.
And that sounds like a nice place for you guys to take us into what we can look forward to in terms of Helpful Social Work Series 9. What can people expect, Sylvia and Chantel?
Dun, dun, dun. Go ahead, Sylvia, you want to go?
There you go. We talked about this yesterday.
I know we did. And I think for us, we're going to look at maybe breaking the year up into seasons. I think for the first episode, we're going to bring the core members on again, just to just introduce ourselves, speak about who we are in our workspaces, and you know, just to give a kind of vision for the next year.
I think one of the things we were saying was that yes, there are some of the bigger debates. One could say that's what we were having now. We could have those kinds of debates, but certainly we need to respond initially to some of the challenges that are going on around us. But yes, so there's, for instance, what's happened with Diane Abbott. I come back to that because in a way that speaks volumes about the perception of black women, the perception of black people. So that would be a kind of cool starting point, unless of course something else happens.
Yeah. Let's say in relation to talking about issues that as black women we have in our smaller spaces, but trying to bring that to a wider platform, and bringing in different voices about and different perspectives, because as we said in previous episodes, yes, we may all be black women, but we don't all share the same experiences and we don't all have the same understanding and interpretation around issues. And often, you know, we have these conversations amongst ourselves. I think, you know, having a podcast platform, it's better to, or it will help us to get these conversations much more in the wider perspective, and the wider space, for people to really understand the nuances, and, you know, the importance, and yeah, just how, yeah, the Diane Abbott thing, it triggered us on a level that I don't think we can even articulate. Well, I know I can't really articulate it. And we think, you know, it's 2024 and these things are still going on. And it's not even just that it happened. It's how it's been handled the next day, the day after. It's just the whole. Oh, yeah. It left me kind of paralyzed, numb. I'm quite speechless if I'm really, really honest. No matter how much work we do, no matter how much space we create, it still hurts, and it hurts very, very deeply.
So for anyone who's not UK based, Diane Abbott is one of our members of parliament who experienced a racist and sexist attack from a powerful donor, as it turned out, to one of our political parties, that was then kind of glossed over and left and not responded to, and then finally kind of responded to. I mean, I think it's really good if you are able to use this platform to respond to things that are going on in the here and now. Mm-hmm. When we started it out, we tended to have a theme and then also do additional podcasts around stuff that came up. And some of the stuff that came up podcasts were the most kind of creative and energized ones, and I think that's a really important thing, to be able to respond to the things that people are thinking about and talking about right now that are affecting social workers and social work in our society, and also to have those voices that aren't heard anything like enough, because I think there's a real will for understanding, for people to understand diverse perspectives, and it's hugely generous to share your voices and thoughts.
I mean absolutely, and I think the critical thing is that it's not just Chantal and I. there are others in our group, in our membership, and the increasingly growing membership, that would really value an opportunity to share. And I think a podcast of this is going to enable that.
It will. It definitely will. And just to add as well, I think something else we discussed yesterday, or maybe we didn't discuss it yesterday, but we discussed it before, is it's not, yes, we are black women, we are an organization for black women, but there's more to us than our race and our gender. As well, and I think that's important that we need to remember. There's more to us than our trauma. We need to talk about some of the positives, that joy, some of the positive things that are going on and that we experience as a community, as a people, as a collective, but also as individuals as well. So, yeah,
we normally finish up with, has anyone got any kind of final thoughts.
It's been an hour already, Jerry.
For the air ahead.
It does go quick, doesn't it?
It really does. I was like, oh, just getting into it. Final thoughts. I'm not going to go first. I can't remember what to say. My brain.
I'll go first. So
go ahead.
Out of the way. Final thoughts. As we've been discussing, you know, a range of topics, and we've been talking about, you know, our review of last year and so on, I'm getting a bit excited. Just a bit. And, I think what, as one door kind of closes, another opens, and, it's going to be exciting to see what emerges from this particular, podcast as we move forward. And, so thank you again.
Yeah.
Joe and Jerry for handing on the baton.
Well, I'm going to be a bit sentimental, Joe, as you'll be astonished to hear, actually, because I'm not usually, but you're thinking back to that bridge. We're leaving Helpful Social Work behind, which is strange. It's absolutely the right time. And, you know, I hope that we can take from it all of the amazing experiences we've had over 8 years and keep having these conversations with each other and with other people. But I am really looking forward to being a listener in the year ahead.
Well, I love that one.
I get invited back, Jerry.
That was going to be my one, actually. You know, bring them back in a year's time. And that's fine.
We're not just disappearing.
I think that would be, you know, that would be good. And you know, I think I was thinking about, you know, yeah, of course you guys staying on as listeners, you know, being our critical friend, you know, of course we're not going to live up to your expectations. I don't mean it in that way, but we're going to do it our way.
Surprise,
but in a way,
so.
Yeah. and you know, I'm excited. I am really excited. We may not have a step by step script, but that's okay because that's not... and you know that's not how we work.
Joe never followed the script anyway.
But Jerry made Jerry feel safe to give it to me, and that was important.
And that's why I remember when we first spoke about, you know, how you two work together. I'm definitely more of a Joe type of person, where I just want to, you know, just have that conversation, just speak what's on my mind, even if I may forget in the moment. I think there's something so much more authentic about that, and I think it, you know, for me it's about just staying true to my style, our style, what we want to bring, but at the same time just making sure that we make the best content, and making sure that we definitely use, you know, the expertise we have, across the network and outside, because it's not just going to be our members. I think we can bring people from outside as well. So I'm really excited as well about the possibilities. I've always wanted a podcast. Did I say that at the beginning? Always. So, really appreciative to you two, honestly. And you know, you've left your baby in good hands. I can tell you that.
Yeah. And I think we're very convinced of that, Chantel and Sylvia. I'm really looking forward to being a listener too, and I will miss the opportunity to have the balance that Jerry has offered me, because one of the things that I've found over these 8 years is that I've grown tremendously in terms of my ability to be more nuanced and more thoughtful, and the opportunities I've had on this podcast to be reflective, the privilege of having my voice heard, and being able to talk about things that mattered to me has been tremendous. Yeah. And I know that I'm not leaving it behind. I'm taking your voices now over the bridge with me, so I can listen to your thoughtfulness and your wisdom and all of those things. And I guess my final thought is just, humans have such a capacity for good and for kindness and for great deeds, you know, and we do see that amongst the social workers that we work with, that we meet, that we watch. And that would be my kind of passing thought, would be, you know, social work is a profession, a human endeavor to be celebrated and valued. So it's been great to be able to do this and talk about that.
Beautiful.
Lovely.